The contentious woman, the brawler.
We don't normally think of ourselves as brawlers, but it's the idea of striving or fighting or disputing or in some way trying to compete. To compete what? Or compete against what? Doesn't matter. It's just that atmosphere. When that atmosphere is true, it's like the dripping of a hole in the roof where it's just dink, 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 dink. And it sets such a tone for the home. So when we're dealing with these, I'm going to call them relationships or relational irritations, and I use the word drips, you know, D-R-I-P-S, dealing with our relational irritations, and the opposite, of course, is to be poised to serve. And hopefully by the time we look at a bunch of these, you and I will find some ways to be better prepared and better poised to serve than to deal with all these relational irritations. The first one that came to my mind, though, as it relates to women, is anger. You say, well, I'm not an angry person. I didn't think I was either. And I've told you this story before, that I lived alone for almost 11 years, very happy, me and my dog. I had no anger issues. I didn't. Except when the dog ate part of the banister. It irritated me a little bit. But other than that, I didn't see myself as irritable. I didn't see myself as short-tempered. I didn't see myself as having irritations. I thought I was, you know, whatever. It is true, it takes a lot to get me to blow. But in God's providence, He had me end up buying a home with someone who is my best friend and has been for almost 40 years, a woman I greatly admire. She's raised in two children and just had a great grandchild this last week. A remarkable godly woman. But when I moved in and bought a home, the two of us started living together, suddenly I discovered, hey, I have anger issues. I'm irritable. Things irritate me. And I can fly off the handle. I can be a little doggone impatient. Of course, I'd like to blame it on her or her granddaughter. The truth of the matter is, it's in my character. Anger is an insidious thing. And even if you say, well, I'm not given to much anger. Okay, well, let's use some other synonyms. Irritation, frustration, impatience, fly off the handle, screaming and hollering. I'm not a screamer and a hollerer, never have been. But that's not the only way anger is expressed. Sometimes it's seething. Sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes it's withholding of love and affection. It's still anger. So let's talk about this contentious, quarrelsome trait. Let me ask the question to start with. Is anger a sin? Is anger wrong? I see some yeses. I see some noes. Let's go to the no first. Why is it not? She says it's not a sin to be angry. It's a sin to act out in anger. Okay, you said yes it was. Why?
Well, I think anger can be a
form of murder in your mind, Matthew chapter 5. Absolutely. He says, you guys all say murder's wrong, but I say, hey, you have anger in your heart, it's worse. So, I would agree with you. What I put in my notes was yes and no. Yes, anger is a sin. Ephesians 4:31, let all things and angers in there be put away. Don't have it as part of your life. In Psalm 37, verse 8, it says, cease from anger. And then in Matthew 5, this section we were just talking about, if you are only angry, even in your own home, you're in danger of judgment. On the other hand, Psalm 4:4 says, be angry and sin not. Ephesians 4:26 is the same thing. Be angry and do not sin. There must be a time or a way to be angry that is not sin. Now, let's think of some examples of that. Are there any examples in the Bible where God was ticked? I was thinking of another word, but it's inappropriate on the tape. Can you think of some of those opportunities? I put some in the next paragraph, not the one we're looking at, but actually over 455 times the word anger appears in the Old Testament, and of those, 375 times God is mad. And he's not sinning. God doesn't sin. He's mad. What's he mad about? He's mad about unrighteousness. He's mad about behavior. He's mad about a lack of obedience. He's mad. Now, if there's that many times when God's anger shows, then it can't be always bad. In fact, it appears that anger in itself isn't the sin. What the problem is how it's expressed and what it's based on. Mothers against drunk driving. The anger that you might have against a drunk driver who's out driving our streets, in my opinion, is justified anger. You should be ticked. You should look at that and say, that is wrong for our society. How can I, in a creative way, support and help to make that stop? If there is a pedophile that's hurting a child, it is appropriate for anger to well up. One of the things out of Penn State's biggest mess, and it's been so discussed, it's like an old illustration, but the one that got me the angriest, I'm not sure when that's cutting in and out, but it is, but the thing that got me the angriest about all of it was the graduate assistant who walked in and saw two of them in the shower and didn't do anything about it. He waited till the next morning to go talk to the coach. Now, if you walked into a shower room and you saw someone offending a child in any form or fashion and you didn't step in, something's wrong. You should have had anger at that moment, sufficient to go in and say, stop it. I'll take that kid, thank you very much. Remove the child from the situation, call the appropriate authorities, and move on. There are times when anger is an appropriate response. But dropping a carton of milk in the middle of the kitchen is probably not the moment. So the answer to is anger a sin is yes and no, depending on the way it's expressed and what it's based on. God's anger at our lack of obedience, God's anger at our lack of righteousness in our life, misplaced priorities, love of anything other than Him evokes anger, and it's a right kind of expression. Now, to get us going on this whole thing of anger for a few minutes, I found 10 principles in a book called Overcoming Hurts and Anger. And I thought these were good principles to think about a little bit. And when you do your discussion questions later, hopefully they'll come up. The first one is that anger is a communicable attribute of God. It's a quality that originated in Him. He passed it on. And it's part of our feeling set. It is a God-given gift that can and should be used to help us serve Him better. To deny our feelings is to deny a part of the person that God created us to be. So that is telling us that in and of itself, anger is not bad. I knew a person one time that had some anger issues, and in trying to deal with them said, I will be angry about nothing. I will let nothing get me riled up. Overreaction. There are a whole series of things that ought to get you riled up. A mama bear watching her baby cubs, and I'm talking about you, not the ones out in the woods. You go to a playground, someone misuses or affects or offends your child, and the claws come, you know, flying out of your fingernails. That's an appropriate response. A caregiver in some form or fashion fails to care for children in a proper way. It ought to come out. Someone offends your husband, there should be a sense of righteous indignation. Someone smears the name of Christ in your presence, you should react. It is an attribute of God. Anger in and of itself is not bad. A second principle that author brings out is that anger in and of itself is a neutral feeling. Neutral feeling. Like all of our feelings, anger can be used for good or for bad. The issue is how it's controlled and what it's expressed over. When your kid ticks you off and you grit your teeth, not good anger. I used to tell when Brianna had really gotten my goat because I would start gritting my teeth. And when I found myself talking through my teeth, I was gone. It was time to stop. When you can't talk except like this. Something's wrong. And the child will do it to you quicker than anything else, especially one 12 years old or older. It's true. I can remember standing at the top of the stairs with Brianna. I don't even remember what the issue was, but I was talking like this, and I said to myself, look at yourself. There was just a moment. Look at yourself. And then I said it out loud. Brianna goes, what? I said, no, that wasn't for you. That was for me. I said, just stand right there. I'll be right back. I went around in my room. I was going to the mirror, and I looked at myself, and I said, you idiot. Those are my exact words. You idiot. You are out of control. This is not the moment. I walked back in the hallway, and I said, go to your room. I'll talk to you later. It was not a moment. Now, she had done something heinous. I don't know what it was. It was probably all her fault, but the reaction was wrong. Anger in and of itself is neutral. It's what it's expressing and how much control you have or not have. The truth of the matter is, one day I asked somebody at work, they said something about, you're mad. I said, do I look mad? No. Is my voice raised? No. Am I screaming and hollering? No. How do you know I'm mad? Because you are so controlled. When I get to the zenith, become very controlled, very precise, very careful with tone and word. My enunciation is perfect in those situations. Now, somebody else, my mom, for example, when she reached her zenith, she was just screaming and hollering and out of control. And your children know when you're doing that. They say to themselves, although they don't say it out loud, nope, she's not there yet. Nope, she's not there yet. Nope, don't need to respond yet. Nope, no. Oh, wait a minute. There she is. Oh, there she is. Stop. Okay. Now I need to respond. Which is why when your husband walks in and barely whispers the same command you've been screaming about for an hour and a half, and the child jumps to it, is because they know he's not going anywhere. That whisper is it. There's no range for him. It's just boom. And they know that. On your case, however, they know there's a range. She's screaming, she's hollering, she's fussing, she's screaming, she's hollering, she's fussing. Oh, wait a minute, she's there. I gotta respond. What's the lesson? The lesson is controlling. Our anger has to be controlled. The third thing he says is we need to listen to our feelings, including anger, but never allow them to control us. You're in Proverbs. Go to Proverbs 16. Most of today's lesson comes out of the book of Proverbs, and if you haven't read it in a while, I recommend sitting down and in a couple of settings reading all the way through the book of Proverbs. What happens for me is a theme immediately emerges. Whatever God's working on in my life, Proverbs handles it. Trust me, it's in there. And what will start happening is this band of highlighting yellow will start to occur through the book of Proverbs. And pretty soon I've got, 52 verses all just on the same topic. If anger happens to be one of your issues, trust me, the book of Proverbs will address it. But look at chapter 16, verse 32. 16:32. Better a patient person than a warrior, one with self-control than one who takes a city. We need to listen to our feelings, including anger, but never allow them to control us. When anger controls us, it doesn't matter all the other things that might be associated with it. For example, we'll say to ourselves, but it's right for me to be angry. My husband this, or my kids that, or my next door neighbor this, or an employee that, or an employer this. When we're looking around ourselves and not controlling us, then anger's had its way. When you control anger and use anger in a productive way, okay. But when it's out of control, that's why he says it's better to be a patient person and a self-controlled person than a warrior and the one that takes a city. The one who takes a city normally would be in the highlight of our culture. This is a great warrior. He's got great leadership. He won the prize. No, the person who wins the prize is the one who's controlled. You can be angry about appropriate things, but under control. Number 4 says we must not be hasty in expressing our anger. Hasty. Look at chapter 25, Proverbs 25, verse number 8. quick to anger is dangerous. If you're quick to anger, ooh, big important thing to be working on. Chapter 25, let's start at the end of verse 7. What you've seen with your eyes, do not bring hastily to court. For what will you do in the end if your neighbor puts you to shame? The idea is, do not quickly move to expressing something that's going on in your life. Ecclesiastes says, be not hasty in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. The person that flies off the handle is by definition a fool. If your situation, home, work, relationships, brothers, sisters, parents, your own children, your own husband, grandchildren, whatever, next door neighbor, if they've got your buttons and they can push them in sequence and they have those memorized, when they push those in sequence and you quickly go to anger, you're not in control. The quicker you go to anger is a dipstick, a measurement to how bad of an issue you have with anger. Now, I'm not saying, on the other hand, if you're, you know, slow to anger and yet overdo it on the other end, that somehow that's good. But I am saying that the quickness of going to anger is one of the indicators of our problem. Don't be hasty in expressing our anger. We should not procrastinate in dealing with it. And Ephesians 4 talks about not letting the sun go down on your anger. That's not just a chronological issue. That's not just, oh, the sun went down at 6:33, we got to solve this very quickly. It's an emotional thing, too. What God's trying to say is, you need to deal quickly with whatever it is that ticked you off. If it's husband and wife, if you don't deal with it in a one-day compartment, then it takes many days for that thing to get resolved. And all of those days are lost. Think about the last time you had a knockdown drag-out with someone, a sister, a brother, a husband, a kid, whatever. A really good knockdown drag-out. Now we're not talking. Everybody goes to their corner. How long does it take for that massive freeze to thaw? A while. One of the things I often ask couples if I'm spending some social time with them is, who gives in first? Who's the quickest to say, I'm sorry? Yeah. The other one, whoever that is, probably has a bigger issue of anger. The quicker you can deal with whatever that ticked you off or set you off, the better off you are. Whether it's with a kid or a spouse or a neighbor or a family member or somebody at work. Which is why Matthew 18 is such a wonderful New Testament example. If you got aught against your brother, you go to him. You go to him. You don't wait. You don't sit around. You don't think about it forever. You don't wait till that magic moment. You go to him. I said to you before the holidays I had a letter to write. Remember, I procrastinated a little while. I wrote my letter. And as is so true of God, the other party melted, came back with this amazingly, yes, please, oh, that's good. It was wonderful. It was a restoration. Now, in my mind, the other party was the offending party. I think they were, too. But I was on the side going, fine, doing nothing with you. Fine. I'm pretty good at grudging. Fine, I don't need you. Fine. Okay, not good. Which is why this time thing says, don't let the sun go down. It's not a 24-hour thing. It's an emotional thing. The longer you let it go, the worse it is. That's how we get to bitterness. Anger undealt with goes to bitterness. Much harder to deal with than just irritation. Number 6, remember, when you're angry, you are much more vulnerable to sin. You might have had a reason to be angry, but it opens the door to vulnerability to sin. From there, you can go to so many other things. Ephesians 4:27 says, and don't give the devil an opportunity. Don't let him have the edge. Don't sling the door open with unmitigated anger. Look at Proverbs 29, you're a couple chapters over, verse 29:22. An angry person stirs up conflict, and a hot-tempered person commits many sins. It's not just the original anger. It spins from there. It's almost like we give ourselves permission then to be hurtful You know, you've hurt me, I've hurt you, you hurt me, now I'm going to hurt you, and I'm going to hurt you, and I'm going to hurt you, and I'm going to hurt you. You hurt me, and I'm going to get back at you. You hurt me, and I'm going to express it in this fashion or that fashion. I'm going to withhold, or I'm going to be aggressive. Either way, I'm letting you have it. There's a vulnerability when anger has its way in all of our lives. Seven says, be aware that our anger may be wrong simply because it's based on wrong motives. Wrong motives. This happens when you think you can justify your behavior, but you can't justify the other person's behavior. But you got a wrong motive going. What does the Bible say? As much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. As much as lies within you. Now, there are situations and circumstances and relationships where you don't have control of all of it. But to the extent you do, then you have to express it in a positive and loving kind of way. And avoid those wrong motives. Number eight says, know too that if you're chronically angry, you're probably sinning. If you have a scenario, a situation that's chronic, and you go to anger over that situation virtually every time it comes up, it's probably not righteous indignation. There's probably some selfish something going on there that puts you in a place that makes you feel like you have a right to be angry. Chronically. We had an employee, we don't have them right now, and I'm not going to tell you enough for you can figure out who it was, but this person drove me insane. And almost every time I was around this person, I would be provoked to anger. I would find something about their performance in my mind that was substandard. And I could do it every single day and have new fodder, new stuff. It came time to evaluate this person. And I sat down to do the evaluation, and someone else was involved in the evaluation process. And boy, I had a list of, 50 things. And I was, as I was looking at those 50 things, getting ready to talk to the other party so we could do our formal evaluations, I realized where the fault lied. Now, the person, I think they had their boatload of issues. But my issue was, I was absolutely chronic about my irritation with this person. Nothing they did pleased me. Nothing they did was positive in my mind. When it's like that, it's probably hold the mirror a time. There's probably something going, there's getting triggered in you something that needs to be dealt with. Yes, the person may have issues, and this person did, but I was getting triggered. And so that little statement that you're probably sinning is true. Hebrews chapter 12 verse 15 says, it encourages us to make sure that the root of bitterness does not spring up in our hearts. And that's what's happening in those situations where it's chronic. If you've got a chronic relationship that drags you to anger routinely, religiously, there's probably some sinning on your side going on. Doesn't mean the other party doesn't have issues. Number nine, and vindictive kind of anger is always wrong. When you're out to get somebody, it ain't good. It ain't good. I know someone in my own life, it's a relationship, and this party goes from person to person to person with a vindictive kind of mindset. And it got to the point where I had to say to them, you know, love you, but I can't hang around you. It's rubbing off. I'm joining your causes. I'm rallying to the points, and it's not healthy. Vindictive anger is always wrong. When you're out to hurt somebody, to get them, to get back at them, to make them feel what you feel, teeth are gritted, maybe not literally, but emotionally. Psalm 34:8 says, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Number 10 says, it's also true that anger may be righteous, and we've talked about that. The very absence of anger can maybe displease God. There are times when you should be angry for all the right reasons. I'm astonished at some of the things that are going on in our culture that Christians are not rising up against. I defy you to sit down over a 5-day period of time and watch 2/3 of what's on the television between 8 and 10 o'clock at night and not get on your hobby horse about something. You ought to. I was watching football religiously over the holidays, and one of the games, for whatever reason, was highlighting the commercials all about the cartoons shows. By cartoons, I don't mean Bugs Bunny and those kind of cartoons. I mean, you know, what are those ones called? I don't know. Can't even think of the names of them. They're relatively new within the last 5 years, and they proliferate television. The little cartoon characters are so profane. And even the cartoons, I sat there thinking, who should I write? Who can I call? I didn't. I should have. There ought to be responses in us, in our culture, that rile us up. The quietness in our hearts is not good. Now, let's talk about dealing with anger. First off, really realize, you know, it's one of those, okay, I get it, what do we do now? Well, first off, we say to ourselves, conflict is normal. This is so funny about my friend Barb. We had lived together for a year or so, and something came up over something stupid, and there was an absolute knockdown drag out. I think it was the butter story, but here's the butter story. I like butter cold and hard. She likes butter warm and mushy. Okay. So for the first year, we had this knockdown drag out about the butter. And I kept sticking it in the fridge. And then when I'd get really ticked, I'd stick it in the freezer. And she kept taking it out. And so she'd take it out. It took us like a year to dawn on us. We could have 2 butter dishes. 2. 1 cold and 1 not. Tells you about the character. At any rate, we got into a knockdown drag out, and there were tears and upsetness, and I said to her, you know, I guess we have to sell the house. And she said, why do we have to sell the house? And I said, because we just have this knockdown drag out, and I don't like you very much, and you don't like me, and there's nothing about you that's like me, and we're so different, and go away, I like living alone, and we're going to sell the house. And she said, in so many words, she agreed, conflict is normal. Now, you're laughing at me, but I was raised in a home where there was nothing but conflict. My mom was a walking, talking furball of conflict. 24 hours a day, there was intense ugliness in my childhood home. Unbelievable. So, I determined that, ooh, that's not good, and I don't want to live that way, so I'm going to live this other way, which is perfectly under control. There will be no conflict. Right? And then I got saved at 21 years of age and said, oh, that's it. That's how you do it. You get saved, and you become a child of God, and there is no more conflict. And I lived alone with my dog. And then I moved in with my best friend. And suddenly we had conflicts. And one of the healthiest things that's ever happened in my life is for me to realize that is a normal part of life. 2 people cannot agree about everything, especially if your personalities are diametrically opposed, which ours are. What's similar and very similar is our character and the things that matter to us about morals and values. Our values are identical. Our personalities totally opposite. Does that sound like maybe somebody you're married to? Or your sister? Or maybe your best friend? Conflict is normal. It's what we do with it that makes it become a sin or not. Some statistics I found somewhere where, you know, conflict often begins at home. 29%, a loved one, about 1/3 of the time, a loved one is the target of your anger. A loved one. Someone that has to love you, lives in your home, will make it possible for you to come home. 24% someone you is well known and is liked. 24%, about a quarter of the time when we're mad at somebody, it's somebody we like. Only about 25% is it towards just an acquaintance. Only 8% of the time is anger displayed to someone that we know but we dislike, and only 8% of the time is anger shown towards someone we don't know. So where are we showing our anger? to the people we know and love. The old joke is they have to let us back in, kind of thing. That is true to a certain extent. Conflict often is at the home. And conflict is often necessary. If it's not, it doesn't have to be a sign of hostility. I put that in your notes. It's just a sign of disagreement. Two people can disagree about the kind of butter they like. Now, in my mind, it became that's it, we gotta sell the house, because we can't get along. No. Two cubes of butter solved that one. And Barb and I have lived together since 1990, so what, about 20 years now? We've had many other issues other than butter. And she's the gracious one, I have to admit it. She's the kind and roll over and be friendly and it doesn't matter. And for me, everything matters. Everything matters. There is a right and a wrong to where you put the cans in the pantry. But this business about conflict being necessary, it's necessary. It's necessary for me to see that my way is not the right way. It's just a way. When you have a kid who's contentious at home, it's not that they're always wrong. It's just that they think they're always right. There's a difference. There is a difference. Conflict is not bad. Raising kids where there's conflict between child and parent is not bad. If you've got a young girl, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, conflict is your lot in life. You are raising four of them. You are raising three. You're crazy women. Conflict, capital C, is going to run in your house for the next 15, 20 years. And it's not bad in and of itself. When you and your husband have a real disagreement over an issue, that is not necessarily bad. It's how you handle it. Do you slay each other? Do you make the other one belittled? Do you go after their character? Do you make fun of them? Therein lies all the problems. Conflict in and of itself is not bad. It's not a deficiency. It's part of the human life. It's part of human experience. Now, how do you handle it? First, you recognize what's going on. You try to identify the real reason, the real cause, what's making you hurt or angry or displeased. This is a great, great exercise. Next time you're provoked to anger, stop and say to yourself, what really is going on? I have discovered a couple things about myself. When I'm hungry, I'm disagreeable. When I have to go to the restroom, I'm disagreeable. When I have to do something I don't want to do, if I've got a conflict coming at work and I know I have to deal with it, I am disagreeable for 2 weeks beforehand. If you can stop and ask yourself, what's really going on here? With our kids, it's often fear. The kids in our face, they're doing something wrong, we're trying to deal with it, and we're provoked to anger. It's not the thing they did, it's our fear. They're going down that path, I'm going to lose them. This is it. This is the first step towards, you know, the halfway house. They miss curfew, that's it. I can tell they're going to go down the hill. Cocaine is next. It's true. The fear factor is really what's going on. It's not anger. It's fear that's provoking anger. I have a friend who the other day said to me, the kid, I said, how's your kid doing? They're a teenager, a senior in high school. Fine, but we've got some issues. I said, oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that. What are the issues? Well, she keeps forgetting to call in when she moves from place to place. You know, they have a little rule, we thought you were there, so you got to call in. She keeps forgetting to do that. And I went, oh, horrors. And the person did not think that was funny. Did not see humor in that at all. And she said, Sherry, this is an issue. We have taught her, trained her. Every day before she leaves the house, we remind her. That's why she has a cell phone. She has a privilege of a car. She should be checking in. I went, oh, yeah, horrors. Next thing, Coke. I can just see it. She is not laughing. I'm laughing. That's what happens, though. It's not really anger over the kid didn't call in. The mom has got a Lego connect going on in her mind. She's not checking in, so probably she's more interested in boys than we think. And, you know, they're not really at the restaurant. They're in the back of a car. And the next thing, you know, we got a pregnancy, and now we got it. You connected it all. rather than just the kid forgot. The frontal lobe of their head has not developed yet. Do a little research on that. That really helped me, by the way. At 18, that really helped me to think she just can't get it. It's not that she's not getting it. Anyway, recognize what's going on. When your husband takes you off just by the way he says hello, because he threw the keys in the wrong place, or he threw his shoes in the wrong place, or you've told him a billion times, couldn't he please put his briefcase over here, or his socks, or his undies, or whatever it is. What's really triggering it for you? What really is at stake? Why are you hurt? Why are you displeased? I love this next one. I call it the 5-6-7 principle. We got to look to Nehemiah. Go to Nehemiah. I've had you in Proverbs, but I want you to look at Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 5. Stopping and counting to 10 is always helpful, but I like the 5-6-7 principle. Nehemiah 5:6-7. Chapter 5, verses 6 and 7. Nehemiah's kind of angry, he's kind of upset. The poor are you know, not able to do what they need to do in terms of rebuilding the temple, and they're outcrying, and they're saying, hey, how can we work at the temple when, you know, things are not going well from us, and they're taxing us in an appropriate way. And so in verse 6 he says, when I heard their outcry and these charges, I was very angry. And so, you know, here he goes, off to the races, ready to fix it. No, verse 7. I pondered them in my mind. And then, after the pondering, I accused the nobles and the officials, and I told them, you're charging your own people interest. So I called together a large meeting to deal with them, and I said, blah, 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 blah. I call it the 5-6-7 principle, Nehemiah 5, verse 6 and 7. It's the I hear it, I get the information, all right, fine. Then I stop and ponder it, and then I act. Next time someone irritates you, do that. Stop and ponder it a minute. Why am I so irritated about this? And usually it's because we're emotionally keeping score. This is the 57th time he's whatever. And we're pretty good scorekeepers. You know, this is the 13th time, whatever. I was angry, but I consulted with myself, one translation says. I stopped. I went in and I looked in the mirror and I had a chat. I think I've mentioned this before. I had a friend who was raising children, a single mom. And anger was an issue in that home. And the kids were out of control, and father had walked out, and finances were a mess, and there were all kinds of conditions that were ripe for anger in that home. But she was losing it too regularly with her kids. And so she came to me one day and she said, Sherry, I need someone to hold me accountable. I need to work on this. So I didn't have this passage in my mind, but I had the idea of stop and pause. And I said, I want you to go do something. When the trigger hits and you know, you're at boiling point, go do something. What can we have you do? And I came up with brush your teeth. And I said, so I want you to go in and I want you to brush your teeth. She goes, you want me to brush my teeth? Yeah, that's it. Go brush your teeth. When you feel it, you know, it's out of control, it's about ready to blow, the house is, you know, under demolition, you stop, go brush your teeth. She goes, okay. So a week or so went by, she said to me, I've had to make 3 trips to the store to buy toothpaste. And I said, okay, I can see. How's it going in the house? A little better. I got the cleanest teeth in town. And so as a joke, I bought her from that time forward, all of our friendship, boxes of toothpaste. Because it was a proactive way to say, time out. During that time out, in number 3, he says, pray before proceeding, even if it's a single prayer, you know, a single word prayer. It can be help, it can be peace, it can be patience. That used to be mine. Patience. Don't open your mouth yet. Patience. Wisdom, I need wisdom. Discernment, I need insight. Before I shoot my mouth off, what should I look for? Lord, please, help, peace, patience, wisdom, discernment, insight, understanding. You could make a long list. And then and only then choose your course of action. If you've tried to identify what's ticking you off, you've done the literal count to 10 or 5, 6, 7, and you've prayed about it even briefly, then and only then do you get to choose a course of action. Sometimes you need to confront. Sometimes it's appropriate to go ahead and confront. Leviticus 19 talks about you may surely reprove your neighbor. There are times to look at someone and say, that's not good. You are out of control. Another, I can tell you all kinds of stories about me today. You're never going to come back to Bible study anymore. You're going to think I'm such a terrible sinner, but let me give you one more. When we were building this building, and we had to get rid of, we were in modulars over there, and our drive pattern we couldn't use anymore, we had to invent literally a cul-de-sac down here. So people came in the gate, came around a little cul-de-sac, and went right back out. So dismissing kids was a nightmare. So we had them all lined up in front of the barn in rows, and we had people stationed, one with a walkie-talkie, the other walkie-talkie. They'd identify a car that came in the driveway. Hartenhaus, line up the Hartenhaus. And so then we try to get the kids in. But we're talking about a space out here, the width of a couple of cars. And, you know, we probably took us about 30 minutes to dismiss everybody every single day. And my job was about halfway down, right between the two cars. And I literally would have to turn sideways so the car this way could go by and then the car this way could go by. And on a particular day, I was out here on the walkie-talkie identifying cars. Hartenhaus. Well, the kids were making noise. It was 100 degrees. It was hot. I was sweaty. I was not happy. The parents weren't listening. I told them to slow down. They stopped in the wrong place. I am getting angrier and angrier on the walkie-talkie. Dennis, Pam's lovely husband, is down here at the end, and he's listening to me escalate. Get those Hartenhaus kids over there right there on the wall! Whatever. So all of a sudden, in the middle of the process, Dennis walks up and grabs me, not by the front, by the side of my shirt, and says, come with me. And like a kid, he marched me from right out there into my office and sat me down. He said, you are out of control. He got a cold water, he handed it to me, he said, do not move for 20 minutes. Went back outside. I said, that was gross. He's right, I'm out of control. 20 minutes later, kids were gone, he comes in, you better? Yeah, I found out, okay. You're not doing that job anymore. You have been relieved. Look, the thing is, you got to have people in your life who sometimes can relieve you. If you're out of control with your kids, please pray that your husband will step in. Honey, go to your room. Honey, go get a cup of tea. Honey, go to the store. Honey, go sit in the car. Honey, go anywhere, but right here. Sometimes you confront, sometimes you need to compromise. Acts 15 talks about the Council of Jerusalem. They had a big issue, they came together, they compromised. But lastly, you need to choose to let it go. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you just have to look and say, enough. Look at Proverbs 19. And we'll finish off here in 2 seconds. Proverbs 19:11. A person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. It doesn't really matter. That's the phrase I use in my head. Because I told you already, everything matters to me, which is stupid. So the answer for me is, it doesn't really matter. That's the mantra that I use in my mind. When I can feel myself getting irritated about something, I say to myself, it doesn't really matter. Now, it does to me, but it shouldn't. So my phrase is, it doesn't really matter. So choose to let it go. Whenever possible, choose to let it go. I give myself the proverbial stars. You know how kids get stars when they have good behavior? I give myself stars when I let something go. I have such fun with myself when I get a star. It's like, yippee, yippee, I got a star. I let something go. I didn't go to guns. I didn't have to argue it to the end. I stopped halfway down the soliloquy. I get a star. I wish I could tell you I get a lot of stars. I don't. I need to get more stars. I need to compromise. I need to let it go. Look, the last thing I said to you is that sometimes anger thrives on stuff that's not the usual kinds of irritations. It's things like we didn't get enough love, either on our relationships or as kids or whatever. We had poor self-esteem. there's inappropriate dependencies and all kinds of stuff, there's emotional instability, and all of these kinds of instabilities feed inappropriate anger. And sometimes it gets expressed inside, which comes out of depression, and sometimes it gets expressed outside, which is where the hostility comes from. It's still anger issues. The root of that is it has not dawned on us who we are in Christ. So I wanted to leave the end of this lesson with reminding you of your sufficiency in Christ. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 5, it says, not that we are adequate in ourselves to consider anything as coming from ourselves, but our adequacy is from God. And then Romans 8 says, we are children of God, and if children, then heirs, and if heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, we have a position, a sufficiency, an adequacy in Christ. We do not have to be bantered around with the kinds of things that provoke anger in all of our lives. We actually can rise above it and say, well, not going there. I don't know how anger affects you, but I pray that you'll take some of this to heart. Our children need to live in a home where mama's happy. Those of you that are all married, your relationship with your husband, he deserves to be able to walk in the door and sense there's peace in that house. He does. Even if he's a scumball and drops his whatever, wherever, he still deserves it. So do you. Anger is what changes all that. And it's my prayer that this week our homes would start to have a bit more peace. Let's pray together. Lord, we were talking about the drippings of a contentious woman, and the place we started was with anger. And while I've tried to be transparent and express some of the ways in which anger finds itself in my life, I pray that you'd take the Holy Spirit like a searchlight in each of our hearts. In the next few days, would you identify those areas in our own lives where anger has its way and it shouldn't? Help us to develop timeouts for ourselves, the 5-6-7 principle, or opportunity to literally walk into another room and do something to change the moment so that we might be able to deal with it more appropriately. Father, anger in and of itself should be expressed in so many appropriate ways, but not the inappropriate ways. It poisons our houses, it poisons our relationships, it poisons our families. I pray you'd help us with this. In Jesus' name, amen.